time that we didn't tell the American people the truth, and that we were not candid, and so forth. So we took the newspaper men out there ourselves, and we had the Baltimore speech. And then they said, well, Congress wouldn't debate the issue. And why didn't I let Congress debate the issue? So I sent up a resolution and asked them to debate the issue and act on the resolution. And then they said, well, we're not, you ought to negotiate. And so then I said, well, with whom? Well, the non-aligned nations, March 65. So I immediately responded and said we would go with the non-aligned nations. Then they said, let the United Nations act. And we said, okay, we'll do that. So in August 64, while we asked Vietnam and Communist China to come into the United Nations, and they told us it had nothing to do with it, and they wouldn't have anything to do with it. So then they got Cambodia into it, and we went along with that. Then they said, use the Geneva conference machinery. So we took the lead in convening the Laos conference in 62, and it resulted in an agreement that the communists promptly broke. In 64 and 65, we worked to have some form of conference with them on Cambodia. But we were defeated by Hanoi and Peking. And then we've gone as to all during the year 65 to try to get them to come and to get the chairman to call the conference, publicly and privately, in the United Nations now, both with the Soviet Union and with the Prime Minister. And that Russia has consistently refused to act as one co-chairman, and they tell us under the pressure of Hanoi not wanting them to. Then they said suspend the bombing, and that was urged in the spring by, you remember, Prime Minister Pearson and Senator Fulbright, then and Mansfield and New York Times and Morris. And so we did that. The second day they turned us down, threw it back in their face, and wouldn't even open the statement. Then they came along, and Mansfield and Morris and Fulbright and Mac Bundy and the Soviet ambassador and others urged a second one, said the first one wasn't long enough, so I just finished that one. Then Fulbright took the position, we ought to let the Soviet take charge of the peace effort. He had had dinner out there, so we agreed to do that. And we put on a 38-day pause. And that was precisely for this purpose. We did not think it would do any good, but we thought it might be the answer to his proposal. So generally, we kept in close touch with the Soviets. We sent Governor Harriman to Moscow in 65. We had complete close contact with them here by having Tommy Thompson see to bring in practically every week or so, or Mac Bundy. But in order to avoid putting them directly on the spot, we've gone pretty close with the Poles and the Hungarians. And both of them tried to help on this last pause, but they were unable to get Hanoi to give. We think the Soviets, Abe, tried to do the same thing. But they never would say that they had tried and failed. We think they tried and failed. Now then they come along and say, well, we've got to have some reforms in Saigon. So that's what I worked at Honolulu, to try to get some reforms. Then Fulbright says we've got to strengthen the economic position, not just military. So I've worked on that, and we have stepped up our economic effort from 200 million in 64 to a current estimate of 636 in 66. And because we had tripled it in schools and health and other things, and it was the biggest one, that's why we went out there. Now, that is about our feeling. Proposals that we haven't accepted, there are 4 points. We've told them we'd talk about it, and we'd be glad to talk about their 4, our 14, or any 40 if they wanted to. Ho Chi Minh insists that we accept the Viet Cong as the sole representative of South Vietnam. That's one of his points. Now, we believe, Abe, to do that would be plainly contrary to the facts that Hanoi dominates them and would inevitably lead to turned over the communist South Vietnam to the communist.
What you say, as you know, Mr. President, I've gone along with you, and
yes,
I have the
sure.
highest respect. And if you read that interview, and
yes, I did.
That
I know that.
Praise for
I know that. I know that, and I appreciate it. And I think you go further even than the facts justify
yeah,
when you say I'm brilliant.
Well, let me say this. You're never going to see Abe Ribicoff. If I have anything to say to you against you, I'll say it to your face. I'll never criticize you publicly, Mr.
Well, I know that. You're wonderful.
You see, but my thought is, as I see this thing developing, from the position of the United States and yourself, somewhere along the line, you're going to have to put all those, if you pardon the language, bastards on the spot by saying, on April 1st or May 1st, we're going to sit there and let the whole world watch who shows up. From then on, everything is downhill because you're the man that's gone the last mile, and they're the people that haven't shown up. The whole world will watch that day to see who shows up. And I don't know how you're ever going to silence your critics, how you're ever going to get this country solidly behind you if with all this confusion and all this division. Now, I'm just thinking of this as a method where Lyndon B. Johnson can say to the world, I'm willing to talk with anybody which you've had, and we're there waiting to come. England comes. South Vietnam comes. Cambodia and Laos, I don't know. You can get New Zealand. They've got troops there. South Korea. And let the North Vietnamese, let the Chinese communists not show up. I'm thinking of a preliminary conference. I'm not thinking of negotiations.
Now, Abe, we did that last August, 64.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they just said they would not come. Just
but
two people, Hanoi and Peking. And we walked right in. We put our man right in the Security Council. And we said, now, here we are, and we think you ought to come in. And Uthon said, you've got to come in. And they said, screw you.
All right, I would like to see them say that publicly.
They did.
I know. But if I would love to see Arthur Goldberg and Arthur Dean with Mike Mansfield and Everett Dirksen and their staff sitting there in Geneva on the day the President of the United States says, I'm ready to talk, and have England come and have your friends come and let them not...
Well, see, we can't...
No one's going to criticize you, Mr. President.
If the chairman will do that, of course, we will be there. We can't call it ourselves. The two co-chairmen have to... We have done it through the United Nations, and we're there today saying that to the United Nations. But they say they will not come. Now, if the co-chairman will do this, that'll be wonderful. We'll be there.
I want Lyndon... Now, the idea is this. I'm not thinking of the co-chairman. I'm thinking about the most brilliant... politician, I'm using that in quotes in the highest sense of the word, who knows as much as anybody how to handle people and things, making that public statement, and I'm not saying you should do it, I just thought that this was a wonderful way, once and for all, stopping the whole world, stopping your critics in the United States, because you have indicated that one gap, anytime, any place, you are willing to be there. You're not calling the old Geneva conference under the accord, but you're willing to discuss it, and you and the United States and your friends are willing to be there. Let them not show up. I mean, I thought it was just a great opportunity. I've sweated this out to try to figure, because I don't think anybody has a right to criticize the President of the United States. I think everybody, once a nation makes a policy, has to support his own country. And you said you'd have enough critics, you want somebody with ideas. I thought I had some ideas, I wanted to put them out.
Well, I appreciate it, and there's three things about it. On two of your ideas, I can gladly subscribe. One, going to the Geneva conference, and two, reducing our instance. On the VidCon, I'll be glad to hear their views and see that they're represented and see that the proper weight is given to them. So far as exclusively recognizing them or having them come, I can't have them without the Buddhists, without the Catholics, or without other larger groups. Now, when you get back down here, I'll be in touch with you further, and Rusk will, and we'll see. Don't say anything about what we have underway, but you can say, if you want to, that we have thoroughly discussed it, we've exchanged ideas, that you, when I got your letter, I called you, I thanked you, I appreciated it. I told you that I had taken some steps already in this field, that I didn't see everything as you saw them, but that your works had been constructive and helpful, and you'd gone about it with the proper procedures calculated to strengthen the country instead of damage it.
Well, now, do you want me to issue a statement?
No, I don't want you to issue it, but I say you're at liberty to, and talking, and you can. I'm not...
Professor asking me, has the President, have your written the president?
I just say the president got my letter this afternoon, and as soon as he got it, he read it, he read my broadcast, and he called me, and he told me that he appreciated it very much, that he had given consideration to my thoughts, that he had passed them on to the Secretary of State, that he had stated publicly that he would be glad to attend the Geneva conference, that he had stated publicly that he would be glad to reduce our, I don't want to emphasize this because they think it's weakness, but that he had stated publicly that he would reduce our pressure when they gave any indication they were reducing theirs, which is the second point, or a point, that on the Viet Cong, he said that he had expressed himself last July, and he did not want to go further than that at this point, namely, that there would be no difficulty of having their views fully considered at any conference that was held. Now, I didn't go into detail. I don't know what how far he means to go by that, because I just don't want this government out there to fall, and I don't want it to look like that I'm saying to you here in this country that I'm going to kick him out and recognize the communists. You see? So we have to fuzz that a little.
Right now, the question of, they'll say, well, did the president say that he would call something in Geneva? What do I say?
I just wouldn't hit that. I just say he'd say he'd be very glad to attend the conference. And first, I have real no authority to call a conference in Geneva. And second, I don't want to, and the Prime Minister is trying to get the Russians to do it right at this moment and been working on it for, I guess, for a month. You see, before we had the pause, we considered extending the pause, starting it later, and keeping it in effect while he was in Moscow. But see, this Moscow outfit's been out for 60 days. And I don't want to get that into this, because that screws up his visit. If you get it in any way, mention it. But I just say that the president said that he had publicly urged upon the co-chairman that he had publicly agreed to go to Geneva, and that he would be delighted to do so. And if the British and the Russians, who are co-chairmen, call a conference, I think you'll find we'll be ready to promptly act. They say, well, did he say he'd call one? And you just say, well, he didn't go into that.
Well, in other words, it's all right for you if I say that you've called me.
Oh, yes, I'd like for you to. I think that they're going to be asking you. And I think the question is going to be, does the president have any respect for the Senate? Now, there's not a senator that communicates with me that I don't talk to. Now, there's not a senator that writes me or calls me that I don't visit with. They find things wrong with my way of response. It's too long or too short. The letter is not full enough, or it's too full. I saw Fulbright over 20 times last year. I had him to 15 social events, although his staff put out that he had been blackballed. 15 times now, just think of that. I had Morris in here 21 times, according to the card, Foreign Relations. They've had more attention. I consulted with every member of the Senate twice in briefings last year here. I consulted with the leadership 4 or 5 times. I've consulted with the leadership twice this year. I've had Fulbright in here twice during the month of January. 2 times already. Now, just so much you can talk to. Every message I send up, Abe, Bob Jones called me today on Public Works. He said, now I suggest that you get, if you don't mind, that you get a hold of George Fallon of Maryland. And there are 535 George Fallons, and you just don't know. A man cannot run this office. I worked Sunday, and I got to bed at 2:20 this morning.
Look, I'm in great sympathy. What I said in my letter to you, I meant.
I know that.
I think you're one hell of a president. I said privately and publicly, I think you're the greatest.
Now, on Arthur Dean, you can say to him that that he has my, talk about something that hasn't come off yet, but he shares my very high admiration for Arthur Dean and for Mike Mansfield and Dirksen. Matter of fact, I've got Arthur Dean now working on the India food problem and the Pakistan thing, and he has been working, and confidentially, I had Arthur Dean and John McCloy and Bob Lovett and Alan Dulles. I had the whole group in on the pause thing before I cut it off. I said, now we've communicated with 115 nations. I really went with my hat in the hand. I went to 40 of them. I sent representatives to 40. I sent Humphrey, Harriman, Goldberg, Mack Bundy, and Dean Rusk to 40 countries personally. I communicated with 115. Then before I cut it off, the Friday before Tuesday week,